Good morning. Gamecock fans, today's Wednesday, March 25th, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. Thanks for joining me this morning. Get a little late start this morning. Recording this, so we're going to try to zip right through it. Going to talk football, obviously, as we do each and every day here on Coffee. Got three big questions to run past myself. Talking to myself here on Coffee. That's what we do each and every day. Shane Beamer had a press conference yesterday. Got to hear great stuff from assistant coaches. I do want to say this. Go and listen to the Travion Robertson press conference on Gamecocks Online. It's on their YouTube channel. It's just downright inspiring. And I want to say this right off the top. I don't know Travion these days. I covered him as a recruit. Remember going to Laurinburg, North Carolina, meeting he and Byron McKnight and Jay Wooten. And his coach, there at the time was, oh gosh, his name escapes me. Coach at Sumter that just recently retired and got replaced by the coach at South Florence. But Mark, shoot. Anyway, I do that every morning. I really need to start writing notes down, folks. But, anyway, certainly, remember him. He's a good guy. Hardworking player, has become a heck of a coach. We know all that. But I think you got a little insight into just the sheer will to succeed and approach life that Travion Robertson possesses by some of his comments yesterday in his recovery. I mean, that was a serious accident. And the fact that he got through it through his faith, through his hard work, his desire, his commitment to family, at the same time committed to this football program and that family aspect of it. It was a tough time, you know, beyond the losses last year. That's the results on the field are nothing compared to almost losing your life and being in an accident where someone does pass on. It was not his fault, obviously. The accident wasn't, but you know, the person that unfortunately passed away was at fault. But, you know, he was talking about, you know, forgiving with love and all that, not being a victim. It's refreshing in this world these days, because if something happens to you, you know, it's easy to lash out if it's not your fault. I mean, it's easy. It's natural to do that. And he didn't. And I think that's a lesson we can all learn. He talked about some other things. It just kind of gives you some insight into who he is. And then from a Gamecock football perspective, kind of what Shane Beamer has done, you know, with the program, from a the culture is so thrown around, it's more sports, but from a family aspect. And look, you lose games, you win games, but the winning at life is very important, I think. You know, you obviously have to win football games. That's you're accountable in that area, but I think that winning kind of takes care of itself sometimes when you have those types of deep-rooted foundations in place. And Travion, regardless of what happens on the field, he's already a winner in life. He was a winner in football too. So just go listen to it. That's a homework assignment here this morning. Not a very good baseball game last night. As far as the Gamecocks at the plate, it was a struggle against North Carolina's pitching staff. And then a big inning, 9-1. Things kind of just fell apart there, I think, in the seventh. They gave up six runs. Were in it until then. You know, there were some balls early. Juha's hit one that, shoot, I thought it was in the gap and a big hit. And pretty good start, but then it just didn't happen. One thing Jamie Bradford said about kind of the differences in approach. We've talked about the differences in approach, Paul Maneri and Monty Lee, is that with Monty Lee's approach, and there's an adjustment. You know, you can't in baseball, just like in football, when Mike Furry took over, you couldn't really just get rid of everything bad right away with what was the offense and stuff. There's not enough time. And Monty Lee hasn't even had a practice so far. But, you know, he's been around, and, you can tell they're making the adjustment. But they will strike out more than maybe before. But there'll be less, one pitch outs, I guess, which is very good for the pitcher. He doesn't care if he strikes you out. If he's sitting there, you're getting ground ball after ground ball or pop up after pop up. Clemson's pitcher threw what, 78 pitches in a complete game earlier this year, which is unprecedented. There's going to be less of that. And then you get into the bullpen and take your chances. A little baseball thing there. I'm not a baseball guy, but that's what I was told. And so the strikeouts were high, and I expect them to continue to be high, but I also expect them to get on base a lot more, and they have been. Just briefly on the baseball coaching search thing, a lot of names are being thrown out around there. Jamie Bradford, also in the Baseball Bulletin, his insider report yesterday. If you're in the newsletter, get it, InsideTheGamecocks.com. Go sign up, and it comes in your inbox almost daily. It's about a fraction of what we're going to have on the website when we launch, but just a little taste, right? But good stuff in there. And what he reported, and I can back this up, is Jeremiah Donati, the athletic director, he's going to kind of let it marinate for a couple of weeks. And, obviously, with any coaching search, you're always, I wouldn't be surprised if they already had kind of looked around at some guys. But as far as getting it going in earnest and leading candidates emerging and things like that, it's going to be a little bit. I'm going to tell you from my standpoint, and this is just as blunt as I can put it, I hope Monty Lee gets the job. And there's one reason, other than I think Monty Lee's a pretty good coach, and I've always liked him. But there's one reason: I'm tired of losing. And for him to get the job, Carolina's gonna have to win. And so I'd like to see them win. And last night, it stunk, because these next, it's now seven games, but the next eight going into last night, you got to find a way to get four of them, at least three, to kind of keep your head above water and then kind of get to that Missouri-ish stretch, where you're not playing top 10 teams, maybe just top 20 teams. It's always tough in the SEC. It's not going to necessarily get any easier, but man, just the pitching that they've faced. I mean, North Carolina's very deep, and their guy they started last night's the one guy that had control problems, and it reared its ugly head at times. But I think you saw the stuff and all that. But you go to Georgia this weekend, they kind of can knock the cover off the ball, and it's down there, and that ball's fly out of that yard. But you got Georgia, and you got Wofford, and you got Texas. He's got to find a way, to kind of scratch out some wins and set yourself up to go on a winning, as Major League said, yeah, that's called a winning streak. And we'll see if that happens. But that's people are going to probably get mad at me. He's wanting Monty Lee to just to get it and blah blah blah. No, it's a cause and effect. I'm tired of watching losing teams. I'm impatient about that, probably irrational even. And I want to see this team turn it around and have success and get back to being Gamecock baseball like it used to be. So, and if that happens, I think he's probably the odds-on favorite to get the job. Now, what if it doesn't happen? Because it is tough, and it's the SEC, and it's a interim situation, and we read the stories about those working out, but most of the time they do not, in all sports. So I think this, I think it's time for, and it's probably a good thing you got a new AD, that what we've seen from him is we haven't seen a major coaching search from him. We did see a beach volleyball search, and he basically hired the Dawn Staley of beach volleyball, which I think is tremendous, and they're winning. I think they're winning. keeping up with them and Equestrian best I can. But he did make a good hire there. The volleyball hire, like the non-beach volleyball hire, came from App State, a good candidate and all that. But Carolina lost its volleyball coach to Marquette because, in the rev share world, you have to prioritize sports. And so Marquette, which without football and all, they're able to invest in volleyball from that standpoint, as a Big East school. Plus, he's from Chicago, right up the road, close to home in Milwaukee. And so they lost him and hired a guy, a coach from App State to come in and take that program over. So those are the two hires you can kind of look at, kind of minor sport hires in women's sports. This is the first men's sport hire and the major one. But what I've noticed from him is, okay, so in money, and money's been always money's a topic around here, right? What I've noticed so far from Jeremiah Donati is, and this is based on the Kendall Briles assistant coach hires in football. Primarily, we'll see what happens in hoops with some assistant moves, and then the willingness to, but without firing coaches, to give more resources. They're a little short in men's basketball, but baseball certainly was. Is he's not afraid to spend? I don't know that. I'm not saying Coach Tanner was afraid to spend, because obviously Mainary was getting a pretty penny, but it's kind of been market value. And then, Eric Hyman didn't really. I mean, Frank Martin was the one hire, and Dawn Staley, that it did seem South Carolina was, very competitive salary wise. I think at this point, if they don't turn it around this year, you've got to make what I like to call a caged animal hire for this program. I was asked if Mainary was a caged animal hire. Maybe, just because of the name and the track record. But I obviously it blew. I mean, you can make it. Hey, look, I thought Chip Kelly at UCLA was a caged animal hire. That floundered in the wind, didn't it? You can make one and it doesn't work out. Trust me. You can make the we're not Jimbo Fisher at A&M in football was that way. So you don't always it doesn't always work out. Most of the time it does though. But I think they at this point, you've got to go fully fund it. You got to give the head coach a big salary, which compared to other sports is not huge. But baseball matters at the University of South Carolina. A lot, right? And it's time to get back to the business of winning the SEC and competing for national championships. And you've got to identify the coach that can do that, and then go fund it, and then have one of the most competitive NIL packages you can possibly put together. Which, until they start enforcing the rules, just means you got to go out and find the money. And it's a little more loosey-goosey. We're still kind of in the Wild West. And they were very well, there were this team's very well funded, but you got to find somebody that can do that, and put it all together, put together a fantastic staff, and roll. And it's not going to be a long turnaround. If Monty Lee wins enough to get the job, it's not going to be a long turnaround. This program, you have access to a ton of talent when it's going. Founders Park is awesome. There doesn't, I think at a 17-year-old ballpark, you probably will start looking at some upgrades. There's a lot of construction with football right now and all, but I do not expect this hire to be a budget hire just based on the track record. Could it be? Absolutely. But and that may fly in the face of some of you, because you're probably wondering why, they didn't let go of Lamont Paris. I think he's trying to be fair. Trying to be fair, like, oh, okay. 6 million wasn't enough, our bad. Let's see if we can get it on up there. And so you may be thinking, well, he just cares about saving money. Well, I don't know, man, because you threw $11 million at football, just changing it. Now, it'd have been more expensive to buy out the whole staff and get it. Obviously, LSU spent about $100 million flipping that thing. Players, new coaches, old coaches, all that. And LSU, if you look at the spending, in NIL, they've been right there with Carolina, maybe a little low under Brian Kelly, and then they've jumped that up. So they haven't been big, huge spenders, except for the contracts their former AD was dishing out, the big game hunter that got fired. But I do expect they're going to go kind of to the end of the earth to try to hire the very best coach they can, assuming it opens up. And I'm not saying that because Carolina lost last night. I was planning on saying that anyway. Just my thoughts on that. And if it's Kevin Schnall from Coastal Carolina, great. If it's somebody else, great. If it's a top assistant, great. Because guess who Nick Mangione's winning at Kentucky. Tony Vitello won. I know those baseball folks don't, those are kind of different personalities, right? Tony Vitello won at Tennessee. They were both assistants at, I think, Mississippi State and Arkansas when they got their job. The coach at Georgia, Wes Johnson, he was the pitching coach at LSU. So there's precedent for that around the Southeastern Conference as well. But I do expect, just based on track record, based on what I've heard through the grapevine, this is not super duper fact. It's more like, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. Not passing along state secrets here or anything like that. But I do expect there to be a good hire made. Women's basketball this weekend, 5 p.m. tip against the Oklahoma Sooners, the only team to beat Carolina in SEC play this year out in Sacramento. Sactown, home of the Kings. ESPN tip, 5 o'clock on Saturday. The Gamecocks will get it going. Softball tonight, 7:30. First pitch against Clemson. I believe it's at Beckham Field. Okay, so press conferences this week. Spring practice goes along. Some burning questions, right? So the first burning question, it kind of surrounds Dylan Stewart. And I was asked about this on the show and hadn't really put anything in the newsletter. And I've talked about it briefly, but I want to kind of give something more definitive here because there was, some rumors on message boards and stuff. Oh, the sky's falling, that kind of thing. And it's kind of funny because sometimes there's been rumors about Dylan that just aren't true. I don't know. Maybe he's got a buddy that likes to play practical jokes on him that's at practice. I have no idea. I tell the story often that, in 2024 in the preseason, I had two different people that are good people, not rumor mongers, hit me up about, Dylan Stewart tore his ACL, those two people don't know each other and they've got some connections around the university. So this was getting out there and spreading. And all of a sudden, I was to the point where I almost ran it up the flagpole completely, but did not, because some other people were saying that should know he's fine. And come to find out, he didn't even miss a practice that year. And that was the great Dylan Stewart rumor of August of 2024. And thankfully, we got to all have the pleasure of seeing him play. This is not his knee. It's his back. It's the issue that was bothering him. He played through a lot of pain second half of last year. And if you notice, it was noticeable to a certain extent, for every play he would make. Like the A&M game, well, Nick Barrett's big guy touchdown. I mean, Dylan Stewart was in the backfield. You blinked and he was there. He wasn't consistently making plays like that. And he looked, he didn't look like himself, and he wasn't playing as many snaps. And so what Beamer said yesterday is accurate. It aligns with what I'm saying. It wasn't that he re-injured it or anything like that. Just who he is he's going to try to get back as soon as possible. And so he was, like Beamer said, doing some things, working out, trying to get back. And the doctors kind of shut that down. Like, listen, you got to just do nothing, right? Heal. And that's fine. I'm good with that. And like I said, Beamer mentioned this yesterday too. Other guys are getting reps. Anthony Addison's getting a bunch of reps. Caleb Harry's getting a bunch of reps. Drew Collins, a young player in from Arkansas State. Kelby's brother, lots of reps. Julian Walker, lots of reps. Now, they're thin because you got Kobe Saki-Pry and George Wilson and Joquavius Dodd, and all those guys are limited. So Deion Barnes has got some intense one-on-one coaching with some guys that need it. I mean, Drew Collins and Julian Walker, all the reps they can get. Caleb Herring. I'll talk about him in a second. He's new to the program. Deion Barnes is new. So that can be a positive at the end of the day. Well, it's going to be the only negative that come out of this is if for some reason Dylan doesn't make it back. That's scary because he's a scary player and you need him. All the stars you can get in Southeastern Conference football, right? So, I expect him to be back. Beamer said by the start of the season, we'll see. I think that what they're going to have to be, and this is another good reason why, and I hate to say stuff like this because I'm not disrespecting Kent and Towson. You should respect every football team you play because the minute you don't, you can get embarrassed. And Kent actually, under their interim coach, who's now their full-time coach, actually had a pretty competitive year last year. They were awful. They were one of the worst teams ever in the MAC. And Kent doesn't have this. I mean, I think last time Carolina played Kent was in 95. They beat him 77-14 under Brad Scott. Steve Tannehill threw, what, a dozen touchdowns that night. But, you know, Kent, they're a little better, right? You know, they're a little better. So you can't just go take them lightly, because when you do, you're in a fourth quarter game. And Towson's an FCS school in the same way. But, you know, I think that South Carolina's, you know, quote-unquote reserves, you know, they're second teamers behind a guy like Dylan Stewart can handle it. You know, they can, and that's good for them, too. I mean, what if, like, Julian Walker starts in place of Dylan for those two games and balls out? That's going to give him confidence going into SEC play, because there's no other breathers. You know, it's those two games and then nine straight in the SEC and then Clemson. That's the schedule this year. And why they elected to go to nine SEC games, that's a debate for another time. But that's the schedule. And so I think that, again, as Trevian said yesterday in his press conference and his life lesson, turn a negative into a positive. That's it. So, you know, as long as they get him back, they're fine. Jacarius Peak, like I said, is trending better. But it wasn't something to be super alarmed about right now. That said, just personally, this is not based on anything but my opinion, back injuries are scary, right? One of my worst fears health-wise is to have back problems. I know some friends that have had them, you know, 10 years ago. And I mean, it's hard to walk and there's surgeries and it can really be an issue. So hopefully he heals up and he's ready to go. Beamer said 100%. So I'm going to take him at his word. And, you know, it's all about the season and winning football games. It's like every men's sports program here is win now. You know, next time you play, win. And that's baseball, basketball, football, win. That's the message. And so as long as he's back helping the team win, I think we're all good. And I think too, like I said, who he is, loves football. Barnes reiterated that yesterday in his, or 2 days ago in his press conference. Going to try to push it to get back out there. Push through last year. He should probably, you know, a lesser person that's, you know, well compensated and rightfully so would have shut it down and protected it as investment. But that guy's out there trying to help the Gamecocks win. And sometimes people look at Dylan because he doesn't smile a whole lot, which to me, if I were trying to block him or in the backfield and he's coming at me, it'd make him even more scary. But again, I mentioned Trevian Robertson as a player. Trevian, never, even as a coach, Trevian doesn't smile a whole lot. He's not that jovial. That's good. That's intense. But that Dylan Stewart cares a lot about being at South Carolina. He would have left and followed Sterling Lucas. I mean, easy. Had he not cared. But he cares, and he wants to get out there and play, and I respect that, especially nowadays. So hopefully he just gets back, because that guy, if he comes back and has a great year, he's going to get drafted. That's the type of player with a great year that could be number one, number two overall. And that's good for the Gamecocks, and it's going to be good for him. And that means he had a great season. So that's number one. You know, number two, I mentioned Peak, left tackle. Now this is kind of coming to focus a little bit. And they're rotating a lot of guys on the offensive line. I gave you kind of how they lined up the other day, and Seth Smith was out there. That's one option. Beamer did say that Kojo Poku is mostly inside. So for process of elimination, he's probably not repping a whole lot at tackle. Can't rule it out completely, but he's probably not. Now, at East Carolina, where he really made his hay and made his name and became a player that a lot of schools wanted in the portal almost under the radar, Gamecocks did a good job of kind of sneaking him in. Where he made it work was inside. So that's good. I think I'm fine with that. That's Not that my opinion matters. I'm calling him going, hey, I'm all right, I approve. Anyway, but so he's inside. Carter Miller's at center. You can go ahead and I think safely say Carter Miller is the 98% favorite to be the starting center this year, unless somebody just comes out of nowhere and beats him out or beats him out. But that's probably not happening. But so left tackle, that would be, so the first burning question is what to expect of Dylan Stewart now that there's this new sort of injury-ish info. And I expect him to be back with the caveat of saying back scares me. Left tackle. So what do we make of the left tackle? That's the second big question. And my answer is to be determined. But if you want to identify a potential problem area at a specific position on the offense, it sounds crazy to say, it's the depth at left tackle. And I say depth, assuming Peak is back. And this is why you need depth, right? This is why you need depth. Because sometimes your really good players do get hurt. That happens to almost every team, and the teams with better depth tend to sustain it or survive it. So if Peak's back, it's all good. That guy's going to start and he'll be fine. Maybe he'll make it back. Like I said, with his type of injury, there's again, it's scary because there's guys that have that injury that never make it back. But it wasn't the serious type of patella injury. So he's tracking back and he could be back earlier than anybody anticipates. He could be out there for Kent. I'm anticipating more Mississippi State, but he could be back for Kent. He could be back for weeks of fall practice. So who knows? And then would not be surprised if Darius Gray plays some tackle if they're not fired up about it. And then they're still looking for a graduate transfer. They had a kid in from, or a player, young man, because he's old. He was class of 2020 and actually was on the roster at Western Kentucky when Clayton White was the D coordinator there in 2020. He came in as a D end and just grew into a D tackle from Houston. He came in, though, and he had an injury last year. And it just, the comfort level with that wasn't there. You don't want to bring in a player that's that old that has 1 year and he's on the sideline. I mean, that doesn't make much sense. So Carolina remains in the hunt for a graduate transfer offensive tackle, and then they got the JUCO player from over in Ashton Mazone from over in Midland Valley, right? Midland Valley, Graniteville, and he's from Iowa Western. Which is out, speaking of baseball, near Omaha, Nebraska, Council Bluffs, Iowa. So he's a definite tackle. He's very raw on film. Can they get him up? Can he help? Yeah, I think so. The player that I'm intrigued by is Damola Ejidehun. Ejidehun. My God, I had it down. Damola Ejidehun, the redshirt freshman. Now, he's younger than these guys, and they want to get older on the offensive line, but he's 6'6, 310. I saw a picture of him. This dude's built like a brick poop house, man. I mean, that guy's wide. He was the one. Carolina flipped him from Georgia Tech. And if you remember in the 2025 cycle, and there's one kid from in state too, South Carolina was trying to flip three different offensive linemen from Georgia Tech. And so I was in Nashville for a meeting the week of the Vanderbilt game with some folks, and one of the Georgia Tech insiders was there, and we were having a conversation about this, and very connected guy at Georgia Tech. And Ejidehun was the one guy they were like, we don't want to lose him. And that's Brent Key, a master of offensive line evaluation, in my opinion, for my money. He and Sam Pittman are two of the best in college football. And so Brent Key, just knowing that made my antenna go up. And then all of a sudden Carolina flips him. I didn't think Tech was gonna Tech get didn't go out down without a fight, but the Gamecocks ended up flipping him on signing day. So that's a player when they brought him in, they thought, he could turn into something. He got some reps last year, but that's a player to kind of look out for. Really kind of keep an eye on him. But they're flipping them all around. My bottom line on this left tackle is with Peak, without Peak, with Peak, without Peak. With Peak, gonna be fine. Gonna be fine, barring no other setbacks. Without Peak, they need to find some answers Can they? Are there answers on the roster? Maybe outside of Darius Gray, could he be the left tackle? It throws that into question. Now, in this offense, as opposed to maybe a more traditional drop back game with traditional pass pros, is it as important to have a franchise left tackle? It is, but it's slightly not, because you're getting the ball out. It's kind of just different. But you don't want that to be a problem position. That's still an important spot, regardless. I don't care what kind of offense you run. So if you're kind of looking for, something to worry about, I'm not gonna say worry, but if you're looking for something that's a question that you won't answer that needs to be answered, left tackle would come up. I like Seth Smith. I like Ajita Hoon. We'll see what Ashton Mazzoni can do. They're just to look for somebody. Pete kind of solidifies it, but that's right now, without Pete, I think that's a spot that they're really trying to solidify. They'll continue to work through that. And also, they're moving guys around a lot, cross training a lot. And in this system, you can do that. And it's to your benefit to do that because you're always trying to play the five best. And there's not going to be a bunch of complicated checks, and there's assignments, but there's not going to be a bunch of mental stuff. Like, thank God that was on them last year. And I've said this before, whole offensive line probably not going to pass the eyeball test like last year, but, probably will be more effective. And then finally, and this was music to my ears on Caleb Herring. I've been going on and on. I think the edge opposite Dylan Stewart and the edge period, it's important to be really good against the run, and people think I'm coming down on Brian Thomas Jr. against the run. I'm not. He played the run fine. He got better during his career. It was certainly better than 23. But again, one of the things that made Kyle Kinard special, even though he had 11 and a half sacks, was that he played the run and set the edge. Teams could not get to the outside often against South Carolina. I think that's important. Is it going to be Kyle Kinard good? No. You looked at Caleb Herring, and I may have mentioned this yesterday, and kind of a leaner guy. Well, can he play the run? Well, Deion Barnes says he can, and that's good. And what I was told is that's a point of emphasis with Barnes, as he's really going to try. They've got to play the run first and foremost. And that's music to your ears. Now, Missouri's not on the schedule, which is the one team that just seems to be able to line up and run it all over Carolina. But you're going to run, I mean, Georgia, you don't think Mike Bobo is going to try to run the ball late in the year against the Gamecocks in November and as an offensive coordinator? And, everybody in the SEC is going to try to run it. And so, what you want is, good play out there. But that's something to watch, especially with there's some youth in the depth at edge, and then there's some people that are injured, and then like a guy like George Wilson, he's more of a pass rusher. So hearing that Caleb Herring was pretty good, then that kind of makes me think, well, moving Kelby inside or keeping him inside mostly probably the right move. If they're comfortable with how Herring plays the run, and they are. So that's good with that. All right. The morning show, football today. Mike Morgan's in. G.A. Mangus, our good friend, is in. It's Wide Open Wednesday on the show. So you can get in and interact with Phil and myself at high noon. And then Sports Talk tonight streams 6 to 8 p.m. Don't forget softball tonight against the Tigers. This has been Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Have a great Wide Open Wednesday, everyone. Holla.